Legends, the greatest social casino experience has arrived at Legends.com. With thousands of the best free-to-play casino-style games, chances to earn millions of bonus coins and win real money. Legends is revolutionizing the Vegas experience wherever you are. If you love winning, then you'll love playing at Legends.com. Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Visit Legends.com for more information. Legends with a Z.com is legendary fun.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Labor Day Sale and get 35% off paints and stains August 22nd through September 4th. With prices starting at $31.84, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome in to the early line here on Sports Grid. No Ben Stevens, no Donnie Rideside here with you this morning. It is going to be myself, Davis Maddock, and Mark Zeno with everyone as we cover every single possible angle from Super Bowl 58 over the next 3 hours. We are also going to do a lot of college basketball chatter. We are also going to do some NBA. We're going to chat with Coach Young a little bit later here in the program. We're going to have all of your bases covered no matter what your wagering menu is like. We will be on top of it here today on the program. Mr. Zeno, how are we this morning after another Kansas City Chiefs Super Bowl win?
Well, the last three words, I didn't really like Kansas City Chiefs win. But other than that, it was a great night. I swept the board props 4-0. It was a very profitable evening, all things in total. Fired on the Niners team total over in the second half. That hit. Thank you for the overtime field goal. So I cashed that as well. But look, I mean, I think it was a very interesting Super Bowl on several accounts. You know, this is a Niners team that I thought played better than the Chiefs for a better part of the game. You know, a couple of legitimate mistakes probably cost him the punt, you know, muff, whatever it was, where it hit his teammate and they weren't able to cover, gave the Kansas City Chiefs a free touchdown. And honestly, I'll go back to overtime and continue to scratch my head on that 3rd and 4 inside the 5-yard line, wherever they were, whatever, inside the 10-yard line. Why didn't they run it on 3rd and 4? Because, again, if you pass on 3rd and 4 right there, you are essentially committing to the field goal, right? Davis, like, think of it this way. If you run it and you only get 2 or 3 yards, you know what you do? You give yourself the option to call timeout and talk about the idea, do we want to go for it on 4th down and try to push 1 more yard and get a new set of 4 downs and kill this thing right here on the spot? Or are we going to settle for the field goal regardless? But if you throw that ball on 3rd and 4, guess what? On 4th and 4, you're not going for it. You committed to the field goal. And I just think that that sort of coaching philosophy eludes a lot of coaches at that point in time, especially since in overtime, they were running the ball down their throats. That's what I said to the whole party I was at. I said, watch Shanahan right now in overtime, go back to the run and just grind that defense down all the way down the field. And that's what they were doing. And it was like clockwork. And then, of course, you got pass happy again. And I don't understand why. To me, that was the game right there. If everything else remains even, the Chiefs made some mistakes, the Niners made some mistakes in overtime on 3rd and 4 inside the 10-yard line, man, you get another set of first downs right there, you're getting in the end zone, and that game is over, and Patrick Mahomes never touches the football, which should have been the entire philosophy the entire time coaching in overtime, that guy doesn't get off the bench, period.
Well, I can tell you, and welcome everyone here on radio, Davis Maddock and Mark Zeno with you guys on the early line for the next 3 hours. I can tell you exactly why Kyle Shanahan did not run on 3rd and 4 and why he did not press some of those edges. And that's because Kyle Shanahan wasn't going to go for it on 4th and 2. He knew what he was going to do. He was committed to the field goal before even getting to the 4th down. He didn't even need to know the result of the 3rd down play to know that it was either his team was going to score a touchdown in that spot or that he was going to be kicking the field goal. And There is a great article that got posted this morning on The Ringer that I found pretty fascinating, where a couple reporters, Benjamin Solak, talked to some guys after the game from each team, and to a man, every single Chiefs player said, oh, we knew exactly what we were going to do in overtime. We knew the postseason overtime rules. We knew how they were different from the regular season. We had a strategy that we all came up with as a team in training camp that we were always going to want to have the ball second in overtime, and that if the other team got the ball first and scored a touchdown, and we scored a touchdown, we were going to go for two to try and end the game right there. What did 49ers players say after the game? Well, Kyle Juszczyk said that the team didn't know that the rules were different. The Kyle Shanahan had never addressed the team about the overtime rules being different. A couple of the defensive players said that that they were also surprised by it. So I think it's just kind of one of those things where Super Bowl 58, it's the biggest game of the year. The margins are that thin. Like 1% here, 2% there are going to end up being some of the biggest mistakes that you make. And, you know, I mean, it's the mistakes began before the overtime period as well. It is 4th and 3 with 1:53 left on the clock. Kyle Shanahan elects to do what? He elects to kick a field goal and give the ball back to Pat. Would I have elected to kick the field goal and give the ball back to Pat? Probably not, because at that point, you are accepting, you are landing into the end of the inevitable. Zeno, do you know how much time was left on the clock when Patrick Mahomes got the ball back after that field goal? 113 seconds. It just feels like maybe it was just that Kyle Shanahan and the 49ers were kind of in a final destination scenario, and nothing they could have done could have saved them from the eventual fate.
Yeah, again, I mean, I don't want to get into the overtime rules debate because I think they're stupid. I think the NFL sucks at overtime. I think college sucks more. I mean, it doesn't have to be any more simple than high. You do a coin toss, first score wins. Like, really, it has to be that simple. Like, for me, you'll never get anything better, in my opinion. But again, I don't want to unpack the whole overtime debate concept because we'll be here talking about that, nothing else. Manifestly, you know, what you're saying, Davis, is it's true that, you know, the hardest thing to do in the NFL right now is to stop Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs under 2 minutes in a tie game or a one-score game and prevent them from doing what they do best. I mean, that's really, really difficult. You know, I mean, I think all in total, the Niners did an amazing job of corralling Travis Kelce. I know he went over his receiving yards prop. I don't know if he went over his receptions. I wasn't paying attention that closely. But in reality, like Travis Kelce made one big play, and I think that was the one in overtime on 3rd and 4, 3rd and 6, whatever it was. He did a crossing route. You know, that was like, I mean, how can – you can get upset about it because I'm sitting there and I said to everybody, I go, God, I mean, that's the one time you didn't want that dude to get free. But they did a really good job all night of keeping him in check. Kelce was not a big part of the offense. He was not unstoppable. He was very stoppable last night, although the Niners did an excellent job of not letting 87 beat them. You know, the other part is that Patrick Mahomes took off and ran a lot. You know, that was the other thing that kind of separated the Chiefs a little bit, is that he took off and ran. So it was very much a game of inches. It was, the margins, as you said, were razor thin. And I feel bad for the Niners. In my opinion, they're still the better team, right? Like, the best team didn't win yesterday. The Niners are a better, more complete team than the Chiefs. That's not what this is about. It's about doing enough to win a football game. The Chiefs did that.
I mean, you know, I think we did hear a lot of that all leading up, you know, in those 2 weeks, is that the 49ers are definitely the better team. I don't even disagree, right? 1 through 53, I mean, you would definitely rather have San Francisco's offensive line. You would rather have McCaffrey than Pacheco. You'd rather have Kelce than Kittle, but you'd rather have almost any 49ers wide receiver than any Kansas City Chiefs wide receiver. The 49ers obviously have incredible defensive players, but they did not play as well as a unit in the regular season as the Chiefs did. Now, I think you can make an argument that considering the stakes and considering how each team looked, the 49ers defense played better yesterday than the Chiefs defense did, although the Chiefs defense fairly opportunistic. However, at the end of the day, the Kansas City Chiefs have Patrick Mahomes, so it is a little bit of a flaw to say the 49ers have a better team. Obviously, we've got much more time to go through this the rest of the day. We're heading into break. We'll be back here in a few moments.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
All right, guys, we are back here from break on the early line. Davis Maddock and Mark Zeno recapping Super Bowl 58 with you guys. We didn't even start to get into some of the individual player statistics. We are going to begin with the quarterbacks. Patrick Mahomes, 34 of 46, 333 passing yards, 66 rushing yards, accounts for two touchdowns, including the game winner to Mecole Hardman. Now, I know that I'm not alone in this, Zeno. You know, everyone's favorite prop bet. I mean, you go up and ask a random tout anywhere. You go through Las Vegas, oh, what's your favorite prop? Oh, buddy, what's your favorite? Patrick Mahomes, over 4.5 rushing attempts. I was on it. Your mom was on it. Your aunt was on it. Your girlfriend's friend who heard a Taylor Swift bet Patrick Mahomes over 4.5 rushing attempts. I believe it hit. It might have hit in the second quarter. I definitely buy the third quarter. He pulls off, runs the fourth and one, has the big scramble on the final drive to set up the field goal. I mean, he did have, now to the Mahomes haters, he did have one of the worst interceptions I've ever seen in the second quarter, the one where he missed Kelce high because he was trying to go for Valdes-Scantling behind, but in the end, wins another Super Bowl MVP, comes off at plus 150. I did not bet Mahomes at plus 150 because, I don't, you know, what's the point? Honestly, what's the, like, right. The Chiefs money line was fine. I've never actually bet on Pat to win Super Bowl MVP.
No, I agree. The only bet you could have made, and it was trending that way, was Christian McCaffrey at plus 450 to win the MVP. Because if the 49ers win that game, McCaffrey's winning it, right? Like, he was the guy. He had, what, a receiving touchdown? I mean, you know, he had 80 yards receiving. He had 80 yards rushing, somewhere in that range. So that was the only bet you could have made from the MVP slot that would have, at least for my money, made sense. But, you know, again, Patrick Mahomes yesterday, it's you have to give him some credit. This has not been a Chiefs offense that's been anything impressive whatsoever this year. In fact, they've been less than impressive for a better part of this season. Somehow, they continue to manage to win low-scoring, close games, and there's something to that. You know, I think that's it's coaching, that's the quarterback. And Mahomes did not have, like, the 333 yards was death by 1,000 paper cuts, right? They were all short passes. They were all, I mean, they were not taking a lot of shots down the field. The one they did ended up getting picked off. So, you know, they if you look at his depth of target, I think they were all under, like, 10, like 80% of his passes were all under 10 yards. They weren't even intermediate routes, Davis. They were all short passes, and the Niners did a great job of keeping everything in front of them because they didn't get a lot of chances to get behind them. But, you know, Mahomes just continues to do what he does better than everybody else, and that's make plays when you need them most.
Yeah, really the only deep throw that connected was the 52-yarder to Mecole Hardman in the first half that was then immediately followed, of course, by the Isaiah Pacheco fumble. I mean, it is one of those things. Had Kansas City lost this game, you'd look back and you'd say, you know, Mecole Hardman almost lost them the Buffalo Bills game, obviously was sent into the wilderness with the New York Jets in the offseason, ends up back on the Kansas City Chiefs for, I think, a conditional sixth-round draft pick. I'm going to go ahead and guess that those conditions are going to convey and that the Jets will get to use that pick as a result of Hardman, you know, actually being on the field. You know, kind of, I didn't hear a ton of this leading up into the season, but, you know, the Kansas City Chiefs wide receiver room, I mean, this was, you know, kind of the Brady season where he wins with, you know, the converted defensive back of, you know, back in 2003, 2004. That was kind of the equivalent there for this era of the Kansas City Chiefs. And it's sort of been conveniently forgotten. Obviously, no one really is talking about the fact that Tyreek Hill was traded away from this roster and then they win two Super Bowls. But how about trading a third-round pick for Kadarius Toney, and he's not active, not because he was injured, but because he's just a loser. Like, no one on the team wants to be around Kadarius Toney. He goes on Instagram Live before the AFC Conference Championship game the night before and says, "I'm not injured. I'm fine. I'm not injured at all." And so as a result, you've got, you know, Sky Moore playing, and, you know, Marquez Valdes-Scantling, and, you know, Justin Watson has a big play. Noah Gray has a big play. Like, it does feel like if Kadarius Toney had conveyed what we thought he was going to be after that breakout game against the Cowboys his rookie year, would have been a very different season. Like, it, just looking at this Chiefs wide receiver room, you're right. It is death by paper cuts because who are they throwing the ball deep to? No one can get open.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's kind of reminiscent last year of Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay with a bunch of wide receivers that nobody heard of, and yet somehow they managed to be a 13-win team again. With Aaron Rodgers under center, because that speaks how good Rodgers is at quarterback. It's the same thing with Mahomes. You know, I mean, some of these guys who we haven't heard of and couldn't pick out of a lineup, if they were standing next to you on the checkout line at the grocery store, next year or so, they're going to start to be household names, right? Because Mahomes is going to make them household names. I think that's kind of how this goes in the big picture. But to your point, I mean, you had to choose your poison when it comes to trying to beat the Chiefs. And I think the 49ers did it the right way. Don't let 87 beat us. I don't care if Watson, Marquez Valdes-Scantling, Moore, whoever these guys are, end up beating us. Totally cool with it. But 87 isn't going to beat us. And I thought the Niners did a really good job of taking that philosophy defensively and making sure it didn't come to fruition.
Yeah, I mean, Kelce was very quiet. He had one catch in the first half. Now, I mean, the third and seven. Yeah, I watched this game with my in-laws, and they're not huge football people. They were very concerned about that. They were like, what do you mean Taylor's boyfriend is mad at the coach? Like, how does? And I was like, guys, it's all right. High leverage spot. They've all been here. These are all adults. They know how to handle these situations. Now, the opposite of Patrick.
You shouldn't push an old man. You shouldn't push an old man.
You shouldn't push an old man. But look, it's competitive. Biggest game of the year. The competitive juices are flowing. Now, the opposite of Mahomes throwing to a second rounder out of SMU, Marquez Valdes-Scantling, these guys, is Brock Purdy throwing to George Kittle, Brandon Ayuk, Christian McCaffrey, and Deebo Samuel. He ends up 23 of 38, 267 total yards, including those very crucial for you 12 rushing yards that he got. Beat the opener of his rushing prop, did not beat the closer of his rushing prop at 13.5 yards. Just a little bit of an example of why it's so good to get your wagers in early. One touchdown, zero interceptions. Obviously, does not factor into the MVP voting. Weirdly, I think, had the 40, let's have this conversation. Had the 49ers won this game, let's say, Mahomes gets sacked or Pacheco fumbles or something there in the overtime period, and they end up winning 22-19. I think, Zeno, I'm pretty sure the voters would have given it to Juwan Jennings. I'm pretty certain that Juwan Jennings would have won Super Bowl MVP had the game ended that way.
Look, generally people who vote for things in the NFL are stupid. And they're predictable. Let's not get into the Hall of Fame debate here, but I don't know how they would have went away from McCaffrey. I just don't know how they would have done it. He was so critical to what they did, and he was so much a big part, other than the early fumble that he had. They're obviously not in that spot without him. I agree with you. Juwan Jennings had a fantastic game, and he was, one of the more dynamic players on the field for them. But when you look at the names of Deebo and Ayuk and McCaffrey, it's like, and even Kittle he's another guy that had a really quiet day. I'm surprised they didn't try to get him more open and scheme him a little more. I just have a hard time believing they would have went away from McCaffrey, given the rushing receiving combo and the touchdown that he had. And, what could have been if he scores a touchdown in overtime, right? A rushing touchdown in overtime, it kind of locks it up for him, is what I kind of felt like would have happened.
So I definitely agree with you there. Had McCaffrey converted another touchdown, I think it definitely would have been him. He ended up going 22 for 80 as a rusher, was their leading receiver, 8 for 80 with that receiving touchdown. Juwan Jennings, of course, threw that trick play touchdown, which, by the way, one of my favorite pet wagers for Super Bowl. It's always over 2.5 players to throw a pass because, historically speaking, we get these great coaches, these inventive guys. I knew Shanahan would do it. Now, you got to kind of scope your memory for this, but there was a play in the Eagles Super Bowl and in the Buccaneers Super Bowl where Travis Kelce lined up in the Kelce cat and had the ball and didn't throw it twice against the Buccaneers and in the Eagles. He both had the opportunity, didn't throw it. A ton more Super Bowl conversation and coverage here to come on the program. If you guys are enjoying recapping and looking back at the game as much as we are, make sure that you don't go anywhere. Zeno and I are going to go ahead and go into break here on Sports Grid TV. The Early Line will be back in a few moments.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
All right, guys, we are back here at the Early Line. Davis Maddock and Mark Zeno, we are recapping Super Bowl 58 from a wagering perspective. The Super Bowl total closed at 46.5. There was a lot of money there on the under at the end because it was kind of sitting at 47.5 for a while. I think I maybe even saw a 48 here or there. I know that that some bookmakers, obviously, you know, a lot of money is going to come in at the end from a lot of different directions. You know, there's going to be some props that the you know, the sharp bettors get in on at the end because they move too much. And then obviously, you know, everyone, I did it. I woke up on Saturday morning. I drove over to Illinois. I got on my apps. I fired all of my wagers there. So I was getting in on some closing line action as well. And I mean, come on, under bettors, just like there are anyone who was on the over got really bailed out by that overtime. Cause it looked like a while, like this game might finish, you know, like 17-10. It was looking like it was going to be a real defensive battle.
Well, look, I mean, Davis, if you bet anything prior to Sunday at about 5 o'clock Eastern, 47.5 is where it was stuck for 2 weeks. It did not move. It opened at 47.5, and it did not move. And the game landed on 47. So now, again, when I checked, I, you know, was making some last minute, you know, looking of lines. And when I checked right before kickoff, I saw it went down to 47, and even some 46.5s were out there. And I was like, whoa, that was interesting. Finally, somebody moved that total, you know, in a direction where you could action it, because 47 being a key total, when they got off it to go to 46.5, that was pretty telling. Even when books went to 47, it was pretty telling as one of the more key total numbers that you land on. So I always felt the over was going to come in the whole week. I generally did. I thought there was going to be more scoring. And in reality, if you don't have two red zone turnovers, one from each team, guess what? There probably is more scoring, right? Like that killed any chance of the over when not only one team had a red zone turnover, but two teams had at least a field goal position for the 49ers when McCaffrey fumbled early. And that really kind of just changed the total perspective of the game. So you did get a little bit bailed out in overtime. But again, I think when it all comes down to it, you knew this game was going to be tight. And I'll maintain this too. And I know, and I said this on the early line last week, and I said it on several shows here on Sports Grid, that I thought the best play, because I couldn't get a real feel for the side or just the total itself, that the best play was teasing the Chiefs up and teasing the total down and going over. I said that repeatedly throughout the week, and that ended up being honestly the safest and smartest play because the total landed right in the middle on both sides. Even if you tease it up to go under or you tease it down to go over, and guess what? The Niners, even if they were going to win this game, were never winning by more than a touchdown. That absolutely was not happening. So that was probably the best and smartest play you could have made this whole Super Bowl with the least amount of stress.
Yeah, I think that's definitely accurate. I did not make a wager on the total outside of some same game parlay stuff just to juice it up a little bit. I was on the Chiefs side. Now, I thought there was no way, honestly, I thought there was no way the Chiefs win an over, and had it gone that way in regular time, it would have been that way. I thought the over was obviously way more conducive for the 49ers. The 49ers just way more likely to generate explosive plays. I mean, and it feels so strange. And it's kind of been a trend throughout the playoffs. Teams just get away from their identity against Kansas City in the second half of games. You know, the Baltimore Ravens did it. The Buffalo Bills did it. Like the Bills, for example, we're just shredding the Chiefs on the ground in the first half. It's like, oh, Ty Johnson for 11 yards, James Cook for 6 yards, Latavius Murray is in there getting yards. And then the Ravens do the exact opposite. The Ravens are down 10 points to the Chiefs, and it's like they're treating it like they're down 28. It was like Gus Edwards got 3 rushes in that game. And then what happened, you know, honestly, what ended up happening for the San Francisco 49ers was that McCaffrey actually was not finding the running lanes. His longest rush was 11 yards. He averaged 3.6 yards per carry. The Chiefs, they made a concerted effort to kind of have Purdy throwing in between the hashes. And, you know, Purdy, we haven't really talked much about his performance. Ends the game with 69.8 QBR, 89 QB rating. I don't have a tremendous amount of criticism for Purdy after this game, but I was talking about this yesterday. We did a 4-hour Fantasy Sports Today preview of the game, and I just was kind of thinking out loud, you know who I have not heard mentioned this entire two-week preamble where everyone talks about every single angle of the game down to the most minute detail? No one really talked about Trey Lance. No one really mentioned that 3 years ago, the San Francisco 49ers traded up to the 3rd overall pick in the draft, took a quarterback, ended up totally bailing on him. And the team's fundamental problem still remains the same, which is that they're this all-world, you know, Death Star of a team. But no one in their heart of hearts, you know, I think really believes that Brock Purdy can elevate the team around him. And that's why they took Trey Lance, is they thought Trey Lance had the ability to do that. I would love, obviously, to go back through those sliding glass doors of time. What happens if Trey Lance never gets injured and he just starts that whole season at 21 years old, one of the youngest first-round picks ever to start a whole season? What happens if the team takes Mac Jones? What happens if the team takes Justin Fields with that third overall pick? Like, it just, it is so fascinating to think about how different this 49ers roster might look had they gone out of what we think of, you know, because Purdy is just your typical Kyle Shanahan quarterback, definitely one of the better ones he's had, but he does still play that Shanahan style.
All right. Well, there's a lot to dissect there. Number one, no one cares what you did with your old quarterback as long as the one you have currently is working. It doesn't, like, remember, the Baltimore Ravens dumped Joe Flacco, okay, who won them a Super Bowl without a hesitation for Lamar Jackson. No one cares. Why? Because they got the quarterback right. Like, that's, you know, ultimately what it boils down to.
Yeah.
You can, the Colts moved off Peyton Manning. They got the quarterback right with Andrew Luck. It's, you know, very simple. It's not like, as long as you get it right, no one cares. So there's that. You got it right with Brock Purdy. But I would argue this, and especially since I watched it here in Atlanta when Kyle Shanahan was the OC of the Atlanta Falcons. Guess what? Kyle Shanahan's offense and his scheme doesn't make quarterbacks elevate, ever. Right? Like, I know Matt Ryan won the MVP that year, but do you really think... Yeah. I mean, I covered that team. That team was an offensive juggernaut the same way this one is because of all the sum of the pieces. He didn't ask Jimmy Garoppolo to elevate. Like, his offense isn't designed to focus on a quarterback to do everything. That's what you have to understand about it. So it doesn't matter who is quarterbacking for Kyle Shanahan. His offense is almost quarterback-proof in that sense that if he has a guy who understands it and knows what to do with the football, guess what? Everything just looks easy and simple. And no quarterback is going to be the guy who puts his team on his back and carries them, because guess what? It's again, there's so many weapons in a Kyle Shanahan offense. Go back to what they had in Atlanta. It was Julio Jones, right? It was Taylor Gabriel. It was Devonta Freeman. It was Patrick DeMarco, the fullback, who he threw the ball to routinely. Other tight ends like Austin Hooper. And I mean, like, he had a wide array of weapons that everybody got involved in, which is why the quarterback doesn't take center stage in a Kyle Shanahan offense, and it didn't with Garoppolo, and it's not going to do it with Brock Purdy, because the offense as a whole is designed to make you stop 5 to 6 to 7 different guys on a routine basis. Least of all you worry about is the quarterback.
Yeah. All right. So let's bring it back to our touchdown scores here. The odds pregame. This was not a market I super dallied in outside of, I did have Deebo Samuel to score 2 or more touchdowns. Deebo kind of having, we're what, half an hour into the show. I think it's the first time we mentioned his name, kind of a forgettable performance from him there. We had Valdez Scantling score at 6-1, Hardman at 11-1, obviously the McCaffrey at -210 hits there. And then Juwan Jennings at +750. I felt like of all the markets that had some value pregame, this was not one that I was super interested in. I think McCaffrey 2 touchdowns was fairly interesting if you had 49ers money line, or if you wanted to do any of that. So I don't know how much you mess around in these correlated same game parlay markets, you know, really trying to get that Super Bowl sweat. You know, Hardman, I think had Hardman been on punt still, maybe I would have taken him. What were your thoughts or in retrospect on this market?
I mean, look, I'm surprised McCaffrey didn't get a second touchdown. You know, again, I'm really, really surprised he didn't get a second touchdown. So that I don't think that when you look at a anytime touchdown scorer, you know, playing McCaffrey at -210 was a bet I would get into. I wouldn't lay 2-1 on something freakish happening where he doesn't get it, right? And Kyle Shanahan is such a coach where I'm going to dip into my bag of trips. I mean, look at the actual touchdown he scored. It was like a 20-yard receiving touchdown on a throwback screen from Jennings, right? Like, that's not the typical Christian McCaffrey score. When you make that bet at -210, you're just assuming it's a handoff from the 3-yard line and he plows his way into the end zone, and that's how you cash your bet. It wasn't on that play that you would have thought, because again, he takes one wrong step and gets tackled. Guess what? You might not get that touchdown, period. So that's not a market I would dip into at that price. I only take plus money touchdown scores. It's just not worth it for me because of the randomness of kind of when that event happens, right? So I wouldn't have done that. But I think, again, when you look at the Chiefs market for touchdown scores, the only other market I would have played would have been Patrick Mahomes, essentially a rushing touchdown, right? Like for him to take off and run. We've seen him do it. I think that was one that was, you know, around 3-1 in that range, 3-1, 4-1 prior to the game kicking off. So I think that's a market I would have looked to because you see how much he takes off, right? Like he's not immune to it. But there was not a lot of red zone time from either of these teams, which I found kind of surprising, right? Like they never really got into the red zone all that often. You had 4 50-yard field goals in this game. Like that was the prop that you loved early on, over longest field.
Yeah, the two longest field goals in Super Bowl history. Jake Moody had the record for all of about what? Like he got to enjoy it for like 2 minutes, and then Harrison Butker ended up getting one over on him, and then on a bad hold. And then we had two props that again, I'm gonna be very curious to see how well the books did here. We're gonna come back to these when we get back from break. We're gonna talk about the two most popular props that both hit on the early line. We'll be back here in a few moments.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back from break here on the Early Line. Davis Maddock and Mark Zinno with you as we continue to recap Super Bowl 58 from a wagering perspective. Two of the most popular props, at least in the circles that I've been traveling in, were Christian McCaffrey's over receiving yards. It was posted at 33.5. Obviously, it ends at 80 receiving yards. I really, honestly, you know, I got some things wrong in that game yesterday. I was not clairvoyant, but I would say Mahomes over rushing attempts and over Christian McCaffrey receiving yards were the things that I was most confident in. He got over that in the first half. Actually, had the longest play of the game for the 49ers on a broken play on a third down where he gained 25 yards out on the edge on a running back screen. And then the Taylor Swift prop, all of the Travis Kelce overs. He hit the over on his receptions. It was posted at 6.5. He gets 9. His receiving yards were 70.5. He clears that with that final reception in overtime on the third and 6. Did not score a touchdown, though, although he got pretty dang close. The play before McCole Hardman scores, he gets down to the 3-yard line. Look, if you thought the NFL was scripted, Kelce scores there, right? I mean, that was the script where Kelce ends up scoring the winning touchdown of the Super Bowl. What did you make of the receiving props of these two stars, Mark?
I can't believe the Kelce receptions number was so low. Like, that should have been 9 or 9.5, in my opinion. I mean, especially for a guy who had 11 against the Ravens, whose defense is every bit as good as the Niners, to put that at 6.5, that's a ton of respect they were giving the Niners there. That's a very short number for a guy like Kelce, who you know is going to see the requisite target share to get over that number. Again, and even the odds makers are giving a ton of respect to the Niners defense, because even 71, if you in a regular season game saw Travis Kelce's receiving yards prop at 71, you put your mortgage on going over, right? Just because if he doesn't play all four quarters, that's the only reason he doesn't get to that number. So I thought his numbers were posted a little low, but for me, again, it was one of those things where it's not the market I would look to first, so I didn't get into it early, and I felt like once I didn't get into it early that the public was going to be all over those big-name players, so it wasn't – I don't like to dive into those markets when it comes to the Super Bowl for props. You have to look off, you know, off of the popular ones. I had, again, Brock Purdy, I had over 11.5. Locked it in, I think, the day after the championship game was where I went with that, and it ended up working out in my favor. I was with you on Christian McCaffrey over 33.5. In fact, I played Christian McCaffrey's receiving yards over against the Lions in the NFC championship game. So I was there with you on that one. And, you know, you knew that McCaffrey was going to be a huge part of the offense. And if you were smart and you played his total receiving and rushing yards together, that was an easy win, right? I think you had that close, like by the end of the third quarter, he had gotten there if you put them together, because I'm not 100% sure what the number is, but I know it wasn't 150, whatever it was, for his rushing and receiving yards props. So he was very good in both categories.
Yeah, I mean, the Kelce only having one reception in the first half, I think, is such an indicator of how poorly things were going for the Chiefs in that first half script. I mean, And they should have been down by quite a bit at halftime. I think going in down only 7 points, getting that field goal at the end of the first half to just scrape anything back, I think was a pretty large win for Kansas City. And the mistakes, you know, I mean, both teams made so many mistakes, and obviously, like, you know, the fumbles on both sides, McCaffrey fumbles to open the game, Pacheco fumbles after the big Hardman one. We had the awful Mahomes interception. And then, I mean, the play of the game was the ball hitting off the foot of the 49er on the punt return. Like, that was really the momentum shift, followed immediately by the Valdez-Scantling 11-yard touchdown where Mahomes throws the cover two beater there. I mean, yeah, you play this game again, I don't know if Kansas City has the wherewithal to win without getting that punt luck. Now, the interesting thing there is you could argue Kansas City's entire season was defined by bad luck in the reverse, you know, getting unlucky on those. There were two games where Kadarius Toney had what effectively closed the game out with the Chiefs in the lead that was ruined by Kadarius Toney. He lines up offside, and then in the opening game of the season, a third down conversion to set the Chiefs up for the winning field goal is in his hands, and he just bops it to the hands of the defender. So, you know, it's hard for me to say really, you know, in the end, Mark, I think these things tend to level out in football. People get so mad in the moment, but over the long term, they do tend to level out.
Well, again, and you have to remember, there was I think it was on the drive where the Niners kicked the field goal to go up to 19-16, where Brock Purdy had Deebo Samuel streaking down the middle, open, 2 yards by, and he overthrew him. I mean, I know he was under pressure, and Chris Jones knocked him on his backside, but, I mean, you know, that's a throw right there that would have locked the game up for the Niners. I honestly feel they put a touchdown up, and that's point in time. It would have locked the game up for the Niners, and Purdy just missed him. You know, it wasn't a bad play. He was under pressure. He tried to float it out there for his guy to go get it. He just threw it a little bit too far. You know, again, game of inches, as we talked about at the top of the show. So I very much looked at that, you know, plays like that, that kind of just when they didn't hit it, go, that was the one right there. Like, that was the one right there that would have locked it up for the Niners. And look, both teams had a lot of chances. I think the Niners had more chances to really put this game away. But for the first 30 minutes, they were dominated. They dominated the Chiefs and really should have been up bigger than what they were after the first half. And I was thinking at halftime, this Super Bowl was going to trend more towards what the Buccaneers did to the Chiefs in the second half than necessarily what happened the last time these two teams played and the Chiefs came back and ended up winning the game. Because at least it looked that way for the first 30 minutes that the Niners were in full control.
Yeah, that's definitely true. Now, had you told me that these were the stat lines of Brandon Ayuk, Deebo Samuel, and George Kittle before the game, I would have had to have, like, I don't know, probably taken out some extra money, you know, remortgaged the home to bet on the Kansas City Chiefs. Deebo Samuel goes 3 for 33 as a receiver, 3 carries for 8 yards. Brandon Ayuk, 3 for 49, although he did have one of the bigger plays of the game, converting that long third down there at the end. And George Kittle just basically didn't exist in this game. Now, Kittle, again, also did have a clutch third down reception. He also banged up his shoulder in that overtime period. He left the game. What happens when he left the game? His backup, Braden Willis, commits a holding penalty that ends up setting up the decision to have to go for the field goal. Always kind of interesting how there are those little minute wrinkles. Now, Deebo came into this game banged up. He had gotten injured earlier in the playoffs. Kittle had been nursing a lower body injury coming into this game, but not the shoulder injury. But I do find it sort of astounding that the 49ers, when you sort of conceptualize them, it's all about these crazy weapons that they have. And arguably, I mean, not even arguably, three of the best, you know, I don't know, 25 pass catchers in the entire NFL kind of on this team don't even combine for 100 yards. It feels kind of unlucky for the 49ers, but that's definitely how the Chiefs drew it up.
Well, I agree with you in your assessment. Like, if you would have told me those numbers ahead of time, I'd have been like, yikes, this probably doesn't look like it ends well for San Fran. However, I remember, because I was tracking the box score with all the props and everything, you know, I'm just, you know, torturing myself, looking at every time, seeing after every play, okay, how close is McCaffrey to going over 33 and a half? There was at one point in the first quarter where I think he completed a pass to eight different – Purdy completed a pass to seven different receivers on his first 8 receptions. right? Like, they were spreading the ball around a lot, which I thought was smart because, again, what do we talk about with Kyle Shanahan's offense? They're not going to allow you to key on one guy. And the minute you do, they're going to call, he's going to call something that's going to bring somebody else into the fold. That's what makes Shanahan's offense so tough to scheme against, because he has got a bag of tricks for everybody who's got a jersey on the offensive side of the football, you know? And I think that when it comes down to it, you know, if you were going to play Niners props, you had to know that going in, that there was always going to be a possibility that it's net. Look, during the regular season, it's different, right? Like, during the regular season, put the ball in the hands of your best player and ask him to go win you a game. Because guess what? If you lose it, there's another one the next week. It's not the case in the playoffs. So Shanahan, to his credit, schemes 100 times differently in the playoffs than he does in the regular season. That's what makes him such a good coach. And we can have that debate about the coaching thing later on, because I still think he's one of the top three coaches in this league, if not the top coach in this league, just because of the way he does things, despite the fact that he's 0-2 in Super Bowls. Beyond that, you had to know that going in, if you're paying attention to Kyle Shanahan, that he will make sure that you can't key on one guy. And if Debo and Ayuk were the decoys, guess what? The ball is going to go in a different direction to somebody else, because we're going to keep moving the chains and push this thing down the field. So if you don't know that about Kyle Shanahan, you do now. Sorry you lost money along the way, but that's the reality of Kyle Shanahan in the postseason.
Yeah, he's actually 0-3 in the Super Bowl if you count when he was an offensive coordinator, which we can have the Kyle Shanahan conversation. I think Kyle Shanahan is easily one of the five best head coaches, but every time, right? NFC Conference Championship games, he makes critical mistakes at pretty much every turn, whether it be being too conservative. Like, it just, he is definitely not one of the top five game management coaches. And I think the 49ers would be very well served doing, like, for example, what the Baltimore Ravens do. The Baltimore Ravens have, like, they basically have a decision-making coach on their coaching staff. And I think Kansas City does as well. It's kind of funny, because what was Andy Reid's reputation for the longest time? It was the same deal with him. He's like, oh, genius play caller, guy never makes a mistake, but he just does not know how to manage. He doesn't know how to manage the clock. That always used to be the Andy Reid deal, was that he would make critical clock mistakes, which he definitely did. And even with Patrick Mahomes as a quarterback, he frequently makes the wrong decisions on fourth downs and when to go for it and when to kick field goals. You know, these are the that is kind of so funny, is that he does get bailed out because he's like, oh, well, I guess I just have Mahomes, so like, I'm probably going to win anyways. But you don't see this all that often. Shanahan and Reid are two of the most conservative coaches in the NFL in terms of going for it, going for the touchdown instead of the field goal, just trying to advance drives. And two of the more aggressive teams, the Lions and the Ravens, didn't get there. The Lions thing, like, we can go back and talk about that game, but I do wonder if the 49ers might make some kind of change in terms of, like, we got to bring in a time guy, we got to bring an analytics coach in, because this is the NFC Conference Championship game against the Rams and two Super Bowls where Shanahan's stuff has like cost them. I mean, how about the timeout stuff at the end of the first half? Instead of taking timeouts to try and get another field goal, they just let Kansas City wind the clock down and they take a knee at the end of the first half.
Yeah, again, we were wondering why he wasn't calling timeouts, right? And trying to give his team a chance to get back on the field. And look, there's the conservative logic there is, guess what? You know, hey, let's hold them to a field goal, right? Don't let them get a touchdown, and we'll go in a half with a lead. If we get the ball and something quirky happens, or we go three and out, and the Chiefs, you know, use their timeouts, guess what? I'm putting the ball back in his hands to give them a chance to score more points. The conservative logic was there just, hey, hold them to a field goal. Let's go in at halftime with a touchdown lead, and let's stop them on the first drive and put our offense back on the field. Like, if you're okay with him being conservative on every other situation, you have to be okay with the logic of the way he treated the end of the second half. Now, or the end of the first half, rather. Now, there's an argument again to say, look, it's a Super Bowl. You got to do things differently. You can't, you know, play it like it's a regular season game. I think that's fair. But playing with a lead and a positive game script is so much better than a negative one. And sometimes it's smarter to keep your team in that game script.
Yeah, I definitely think that's true. Guys, we are rounding out hour one here on the program. When we get back, don't go anywhere. Stay with Zeno and I here on The Early Line.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
All right, guys, welcome back to our final segment here on the Early Line. Davis Maddock and Mark Zinno with you. We just had a pretty serious, somber discussion of the Super Bowl. Now we can talk about some of the fun stuff. This is, you know, your Super Bowl squares. Pretty chalky on the squares, by the way. If you got the good squares in your pool, you definitely got paid out. You know, there was no nines hanging out there. I guess five at the end is not all that uncommon. Yeah, five was a little uncommon, and then we got the coin toss heads, so tails never fails, did in fact not pay out for the people. And Zeno, I don't know if you were aware of this, but like the Gatorade color was leaked, you know, kind of on gambling Twitter. People knew that it was going to be purple for Kansas City because there were bettors in the stadium who I guess saw them loading it in. I wonder if the books just stopped taking action on any of that there pretty soon, because it became pretty evident about 30 minutes before kick that Gatorade was going to be the color.
Yeah, I mean, I saw at least one outlet said that there was no Gatorade bath because it didn't happen initially, right? I think I recall seeing it. I don't want to mention it, but you know, if you look around on social media, there was certainly a prop, you know, they were touting the fact that there was no Gatorade bath because of the way the game ended in celebration, right? There was no chance for it really to happen because of the overtime win ending the game. And I think that was interesting. And eventually I saw Gatorade tweet out purple, right? But I don't ever play that. That's not my market at all. I know people like those sort of things. It's just not for me. It's not a prop I'm into. The national anthem thing was interesting, though. There was a lot of consternation. I don't know how much you saw this, Davis, but, you know, we were looking. I saw anywhere between 90 and a half to 92 and a half seconds. Now, Reba McEntire had two Braves. Some books counted the second Brave, some books didn't, and that really was the difference.
Yeah, it was. I mean, which is always so funny. Guys, we're going into break here on the Early Line. We'll be back with you in just a few moments. Don't go anywhere. Stay on the grid.
Your night in just got legendary. Get ready to chase the rush, spin, win, and redeem instantly straight to your bank account at legendswithaz.com. With free-to-play slots, blackjack, keno, roulette, and more, experience all the thrills of Vegas without leaving your couch. Legends has it all.
Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Must be 18 plus. Play responsibly. Visit legends.com for full details.
Get in the game now and score a 50% bonus on your first purchase only at legendswithaz.com.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.